Hi, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a good day today because Lynell Engelmeyer joins us at a very opportune time. She's a certified educational planner with over 20 years of experience in college admissions and financial aid, currently has had her own college counseling practice, and also is the lead of a very interesting website, very handy, called collegeappwizard.com. Lynell volunteers to work with underrepresented students through a local and national not-for-profit and is the author of a college admission and financial aid workbook entitled Moving Forward, What Teens and Parents Need to Know in the Years Leading to College. Always nice to have Lynell here. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Thanks for having me back.
Give us a call now at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Or you could tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, or you could leave a comment on the webpage, wamc.org/Vox Pop, or you could comment below today's Vox Pop wall post page. It's facebook.com/WAMC radio, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, but feel free to give us a call, 800-348-2551. Well, Lynell, I thought of you on Saturday. I was at a family function, and my oldest niece is getting ready to get all the applications out. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, well, where are you thinking of going? And she says, well, my first choice is Wesleyan. And then the look on her mom's face told it all. It ain't cheap to go to college these days.
No.
And it's confusing. I mean, I still have several years before I have to actually go through the nuts and bolts of it. But there are so many timetables. You said there's an early admission, there's an early decision. Give us, where are we right now?
So right now, you could be one of several places. Some students had early deadlines on November 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the next biggest deadline is this, I think it's Friday, November 15th, which is another larger deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the deadlines after that will be around the January 1st-ish neighborhood.
Okay.
And then there are some after that, January 15th, February 1st. And, you know, again, when back in our day, Ray, when we applied,
chiseled our application in stone.
In stone, and, right. Yeah. You know, you apply, there was one deadline, maybe two, and that was it. And now, I think largely due to strategies of admissions offices and trying to shape not only a class, but shape the best class and beat the next guy to good students, or mm-hmm. next school, rather, to good students, there's been a lot more strategizing involved, and that strategizing involves a lot more deadlines. And so one of the real challenges is that every school can play this admissions game, if mm-hmm. you will. It's not really a game, but by slightly different rules. So my school can say, well, our regular decision is January 1st, but we have our first early decision deadline is November 1st, but then we have a second early decision deadline, December 15th, but then we could have early action, and they can have one, some, or all of these. And unless you go through and comb every single website, you don't know what the rules of the game are for each individual school.
Right. And the rules are different, and the finances, it shocks me that you have to apply perhaps even knowing that you will never be able to afford this. In other words, you don't know if you're going to get financial aid until after you get in, yes?
Mostly. There is a way to sort of minimize your risk there, but essentially, there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. You apply to a school, let's face it, if you and I sent our oldest off to college today to a private school, you in the Northeast, you and I would likely be paying somewhere very close to $60,000 a year, $55,000 for tuition, fees, room, and board.
Mm.
And you may say, well, I can't afford that.
That is exactly what I would say.
Okay, so hypothetically, you would say that. And you would have to go through the entire process of both admissions and financial aid to find out not only will they give you aid, but more importantly, how much will they give you? A couple years, maybe a year or two ago, the federal government mandated something called a net price calculator.
Okay.
And if you went on any college website right now that delivered federal aid, they would be mandated to put a net price calculator on their website. And if you go up into the little search bar in the corner of their website and you key in net price calculator, you would have to come up with this.
All right, and that includes everything, room and board and an estimate of books and everything else?
Yes, it does. However, one of my frustrations with them is not all net price calculators are created the same. Mm. The government said to all these colleges, we want consumers to know upfront what they might be eligible for, okay? But what happened is they didn't say, here's the formula you're going to use, schools A, B, and C. And they kind of left the schools to devise their own formula. So obviously not everybody is playing on a completely level playing field. It's more so than it was before, because now you at least get an inkling as to what goes on, but it is still not completely revealing. Mm. And so you may go into this and you may say, okay, I know I'm going to get something.
Right.
But I call the game hurry up and wait, which is until you've gone through the entire aid process and until they've done, you know, hundreds of financial aid applications, one of them being yours, you don't get that letter back telling you exactly how much, and you don't have the benefit of comparing it to all the other schools.
So if there was a situation where you were an early decision person,
mm-hmm.
and is it theoretically possible for you to have your acceptance letter and still don't know if you're going to be able to pay for it?
What a lot of schools have done is they've taken gone to great lengths to try to close that gap, because early decision is a binding agreement. So if I were to apply to, let's say, Union College,
okay.
early decision,
mm-hmm.
essentially what I'm saying to Union is, you are my first choice. I really want to come here. And if you accept me, we're a done deal. I'm coming.
Okay.
That makes it really difficult for a family who does not have the means to write a check for $55,000 or so. And so what they do is they use a supplemental financial aid application. It's not the big federal form, but they use something else that asks you all kinds of income information. And they prepare for you a financial aid package that is technically billed as an estimate,
mm-hmm.
Though it is actually a pretty accurate estimate because they have pretty good information at that point. So that way you can say to them, okay, you've accepted me and you're expecting me to pay X. I can do that. I can come here. And that way you're not making a commitment without knowing, is this school affordable to you?
Lynell Engelmeyer is our guest, and the number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. The website is College App Wizard, and that's with two Ps, yes?
Yes, APP.
CollegeAppWizard.com. And so the advantage of something like that is you can reduce the redundancy of your labors if you're applying to several colleges, is that correct?
That was part of the idea behind it. The other part was that there are now so many pieces to the puzzle, and kids are applying to so many more places.
What's the average number of colleges that a kid will apply to today?
I think the average is somewhere around 7, but the number goes up to, honestly, 11, 12 is not uncommon. You know, anything over 12, maybe it's starting to get a little bit excessive, but,
mm-hmm.
but I will, you know, when you have kids applying to extremely highly selective schools,
yeah.
For example, if you have a student that says, I want to go to an Ivy League school,
right.
That's a handful of them, you know, you're already under two hands at that point,
yep.
you're at 7, and there's no safety school in there, and there's no sure bet of affording one in there. So now you've already got to add some safer bets on there. You've got to add some that you know are financial safeties. So what happens is if you're applying to 7 to 10 schools, which is not at all uncommon, not only do you have to keep track of what those schools want as far as applications, and the application form could differ,
mm-hmm.
the supplemental essays could differ, but you then also have the financial aid requirements for those schools, which can differ. And it became very, very difficult for teenagers who, I like to say that their organizational skills are still in their developmental phase.
Mm, yes.
That's my my tactful phraseology.
Very, yeah, very good of you.
And trying to help them organize this was the biggest challenge that my business partner and I had across a very broad spectrum of students. It didn't matter where they were from or where they were applying. That was the common challenge. And so we created this website, which is very highly customized, so you could enter the 10 schools you're applying to. You answer a few simple questions, like, for example, are you applying for financial aid, yes or no?
Yeah.
And it will then tell you for that school, based on whether you're applying early decision, regular decision, everything that's due, when it's due, it sends you reminders, it keeps your parents in the loop. And basically, if you go down the list and check everything off, you should have completed everything you have to do on time.
Aren't you making it too easy on the kids? I mean, shouldn't this be part of the litmus test? If you're ready for college, you should be able to organize your paperwork and organize all your deadlines and be ready to make the application yourself?
So in a perfect world, perhaps.
Yes.
What we found in putting this together, just like no school, there is no common commonality necessarily among schools and their application processes, there's no commonality necessarily among schools and their websites. So if you, for example, are going through this for the first time with your child, you don't have an older child where you've maybe done this and are a little more acquainted with it, there's some element of you don't know what you don't know. So you don't always know what you're missing to know whether you've missed it or not. And so, and there are some websites that we have tirelessly combed for details, where for me, who's been doing this for 20 years, since before schools had an internet presence, where I can't find the information on a website. And I have to call the school or you know, otherwise try to find out. We've had schools where there are inconsistencies. One site on the web tells you one thing about their deadlines, and another spot tells you something else. And what we haven't attempted to do is clarify all of it so that you can put, you, the student, can put your time into the substance of your application rather than this treasure hunt for details that you still don't know if you've gotten right or not.
Right. And, well, I'll tell you what, let's take a break here, and then we'll get to the phones. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest, and we'll talk about some of the ways you can, you know, get financial aid. And there are several ways you could get financial aid these days. So back with your calls, 800-348-2551. Back in a flash.
Support for WAMC comes from the 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. Newly renovated boutique hotel offering romantic Hudson Valley getaways. 12 guest rooms, modern amenities, located close to winter activities. The1850house.com. Molly Cantor Pottery Studio and Gallery, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, featuring pottery with images of plants, animals, and New England life, offering clay classes and gift certificates. MollyCantor.com. And Safe Harbors of the Hudson, Newburgh. Bells on Broadway, Holiday Market, and Children's Festival, Saturday, December 7th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., safeharborsofthehudson.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Linnell Engelmeyer joins us this afternoon. So how many, if you had to count, how many forms of financial aid do you think are out there?
How many different types of forms?
Well, yeah.
Okay, so the big one is called the FAFSA, which is F like Frank.
That's all-encompassing, yes?
Yeah, yes. It is any school that awards any type of federal aid must use the FAFSA. It stands for Free Application for Federal Student Aid.
Okay.
And everybody has to fill that out. You may not fill it out until after January 1st of the year in which you will go to college. It is not live. So if you are a senior right now, you cannot fill out the FAFSA for your freshman year until January 1st, 2014.
So even if you have done early decision, you have to just gut it out.
Well, what happens is what schools are using as their estimator for early financial aid packages is something called the CSS profile, which can be found on collegeboard.com. And that includes a bevy of financial aid information. I often tell my students they will know less about you if you walk down a city street half-clothed than
nice.
They will know after you have filled out that form.
Yeah.
But that is what they use often for an early estimator. State schools and some others generally do not use the CSS profile. So in a case where for example, SUNY Binghamton offers early action.
Okay.
If you applied early action to SUNY Binghamton and you were waiting for a financial aid package, you are going to wait for that financial aid package.
Ah, okay.
But if you applied to, I'll go back and pick on Union again, if you applied to Union early decision, you could get an early financial aid package out of Union by virtue of having filled out the CSS profile.
Okay. Well, let's get right to the phones. Linnell Engelmeyer, our guest, 1-800-348-2551. Jim in Malta. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm probably not so unusual anymore, but I'm paying off a parent loan. I have a daughter who's a junior in college and a son who's paying off his college loans, and I'm going to be 70 in a couple of months.
Okay.
Oh, I thought the phone went dead.
No, no.
I have a question. My daughter, who's a junior in Plattsburgh, she wants to go to graduate school upon graduation because what she wants to do, she needs at least a master's. Is the process in getting aid and support for graduate school similar to what you would do for undergraduate school?
So there's good news and there's bad news. The process is a little bit simpler. Can I ask you what she wants to do for graduate school?
Food sustainability.
Okay. There is often, you're going to use the FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, to apply for any kind of graduate school funding. And that's the good news, because it's usually pretty much that and that's it for graduate school. The bad news is it's that simple simply because there's not a lot of funding for graduate school beyond loans. That changes sometimes for PhD programs, where the institution itself will put money into students going into a PhD program. But for the master's level, for example, there's often not nearly as much money.
Why?
All federal aid is focused at undergraduates. All federal gift aid.
Okay.
Is focused on undergraduates and undergraduates specifically who have not yet achieved a first bachelor's degree.
Okay.
So, Jim, if you said to me, "Gee, okay, so my daughter could go back and get a second bachelor's degree," it doesn't really work that way. It's really directed at students with a first bachelor's degree. After that, it is usually solely limited to loan funds from the feds, unless the school itself puts money into certain departments for some grant funding. And certainly that would be the place that I would check, is the specific department at the institution she's looking to see, do they have any funding besides just loans?
You said Plattsburgh State, Jim?
She's going to Plattsburgh now, but she has her eyes on for graduate school, University of Vermont, which I know undergraduates about 40-something thousand a year.
Correct.
Okay.
Which includes room and board.
Yeah. And one thing, my son is paying off his student loan, but he had the advantage. He went to St. Lawrence, and he had a pretty good deal there. Plus, he went in the Peace Corps, and they picked up about a third of his student loan.
Okay.
So that's an option for some people, but it's going to be expensive for all these kids.
Mm-hmm. You got that
sure
right, Jim.
Is.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Edward in Loudonville. Hi, Edward. You're on.
Hello. I'll make this short. You just answered the question I wanted to know, but one more thing about graduate schools. Are the public loans or private loans, are the rates the same for graduate students as undergraduates?
Good question.
So first of all, the loan limits change. And the loan limits actually change from year to year, even from undergrad, the beginning of undergrad to the end of undergrad. You can borrow less as a freshman than you can as a sophomore or then a junior. The reason being that the further you get into your education, the higher the likelihood they believe you will finish it and not default on the loan. So the loan limit goes up from, say, senior year in college. It could potentially go up to graduate school. If it is the federal direct student loan program, which covers both grad and undergrad, then yes, the parameters of that loan, the interest rate, would be the same, which is set yearly. So it could change from year to year, but they are set the same way.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Edward. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Lynell Engelmeyer, certified educational planner, and boy, she knows college applications and financial aid inside and out. It's funny, I had a talk with Alan. Alan had to leave. He usually does Tuesdays. And he said, well, you got to ask her about some of these people that write the essays for kids getting into the hoity-toity schools.
Mm-hmm.
Does this really happen?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. If you went down to New York City, the New York City area, you could pay somewhere $6,000-$10,000 or more to have somebody work with your child to prepare them for college. Now, anybody who you know, kind of takes an ethical stand about this, will tell you that they will not do that.
Yeah.
And I certainly won't do that. You know, but I'm sure that there are people that will. I've worked with parents who will.
Who will write the essay for the student.
Absolutely. I had parents at one point where the kid would get up to go use the restroom and the parent would sit down at the computer and tinker a little. Now, I do tell my students that I personally would never send out a cover letter for a job without having somebody proofread it.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, there's a spectrum where you don't need to lock yourself in a room and never let another set of eyes touch this. I'm not sure that's the best idea. But clearly it should be your own work. The problem then becomes if not everybody is doing that and some people have an advantage.
Right.
At what disadvantage are you
at? So it's like baseball and steroids.
Yeah.
If you don't do it, you're at a disadvantage.
It becomes a slippery slope. I think a lot of college admissions officers will tell you they can, they have a pretty good sense when a professional has written something.
Yeah. What about a parent, though? In other words, shouldn't it be a kid should be able to form a paragraph or two or three or ten? I mean, isn't that a great indication that this kid's not going to do all that well?
Absolutely. And, you know, I've had that conversation with parents where, you know, if you can't get your – sometimes a kid just, again, can't quite get themselves organized to do the work. And, you know, do you really want to spend $55,000 a year? Sometimes I don't think it's a matter of the kid can't do it. I think in our attempt to want what's best for our child, oftentimes we feel like we are helping them put their best foot forward as opposed to letting them do the work themselves.
Linnell Engelmeyer, our guest, Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. And back to the phones we go. Mary in Albany, you're on.
Hi. I have a question, a comment, and maybe I need to vent a little.
Okay.
I have a son who's a senior in high school in the process of applying to some very fine competitive colleges. And a month or two ago, the athletes at his school have already announced mm-hmm. which schools they've got deals with and
right.
They've announced which colleges they're going to before my son has even applied or filled out a financial aid form.
Correct.
It's demoralizing, and he feels terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But where does this fit into the admissions process? When, you know, when you go to the talks at the schools and they talk about how hard it is to get into their schools, and we see the athletes are accepted before the bright ones
mm-hmm.
Have even applied.
Right, right. So I'm going to flip the scenario around for you and tell you the school's perspective, at least a little bit of the school's perspective on that. And, you know, we can take a highly selective school. I'll go out a little. I'll stop picking on Union. And let's go out geographically a little further and talk about maybe Colgate, okay, or a Holy Cross or a place like that, which are Division I schools, but also very selective academic institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, Colgate is paying a basketball coach. Colgate is paying a football coach. Colgate is paying a soccer coach. Those sports are all very good for the school. They give the students that are there a sense of community. The alumni, it keeps them involved and rallied around. And, of course, we know happy alumni means they give to the school.
Mm.
And so having athletes at that school is often, in the big picture, about more than having a kid that can kick a soccer ball or shoot a basketball or whatever. It's good for the overall health of the institution. And so if I am an administrator at Colgate or wherever, I'm going to say, I need a good football team because that keeps people in contact with the school. It keeps them in touch. It gives them a good feeling about the school. And I need that in order for them to give. So it's really about more than just the ball sport. And I do completely understand your frustration. And I do see it from both sides of both sides of it. Honestly, I see it from another side, too, which is as a parent, because I'm a parent of a high school student. And I agree that it is. But it's also very similar. You know, if you said to me, my son wants to major in biology, versus my son wants to major in physics. It's a little bit the same way, simply because a school has a lot more bio applicants than physics applicants. So I might take a physics applicant who's maybe not quite as strong as your bio applicant, because I still have a physics department and I need students in that department, and I've got a kid that can fill a seat, and maybe he's not quite as good as yours, but he'll still survive and thrive here. So it's unfortunate, but I think for a variety of reasons, it's a reality.
It amazes me that I know they're building a class and they need people who play sports. They need people to play in the orchestra.
Right.
They need people who are talented in a variety of ways.
Mm-hmm.
They need people who are smart. But it's the athletes who get recruited first.
Yeah, I wish that I could tell you, I understand.
It's hyper-competitive, yeah. And there's a lot of money involved, yes?
Depending on the school, yes. Sometimes no. Division III schools, you go as close as Union or Williams. They will recruit athletes. They get no athletic money.
Mm. Okay. Mary, thanks a lot, and I appreciate you venting. It made for good radio.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Let's go over to Valerie in Vermont. Valerie, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a comment, but I'd also like to get your opinion. I was listening to the different people asking about graduate school and the funds that were available, et cetera. I took an approach where I had a bachelor's degree. I went to work for an employer who, A, gave me a sabbatical to go to a master's program, graduate program, B, paid for it, and C, of course, I did owe them some time afterwards, but it wasn't an extensive period of time. This is about a decade ago. So is that still working well in the system? I didn't hear you mention that to the folks inquiring about graduate school.
You know, sadly, I think it is less common than it was simply because of the expense of it. Obviously, if it's an option that's available to you, I think it's a phenomenal way to go. I don't know that it's as widely available. In fact, my suspicion is that it is not as widely available as it was even 10 years ago, and I think certainly the economy has a little bit to do with that.
Too bad. It was a great plan.
Absolutely.
And it does exist, but just not as much?
That is my, and I'm giving you my sort of gut reaction at this point,
okay.
Nothing scientific,
okay.
But that is my understanding. You certainly, I know even amongst my friends and peers who work at colleges and universities, the tuition benefit for your kid enrolling at a school other than the one you work at has curtailed, or you have to work there at longer and more years just to get it.
Okay.
So it is certainly on that end, I think, less available because of the expense, because of the tightening of the economy. It's an expensive venture.
Right, and I have that other strange question that you may have already mentioned this. Have you spoken about all those weird scholarships that are available out there? Like if you're Finnish and you were born in January in such and such a place, they give you a scholarship?
There's one, I don't know, the one we always used to reference, and I don't know if it's still available, but was for left-handed students.
Oh, come on, really?
And,
yeah.
You know, what happens is if a donor leaves money to a school, the donor can, within reason, kind of specify the requirements for that scholarship. And I think that there are two really good places, maybe three really good places to look for scholarships. The first one is, if you are a high school student, is the High School Guidance Office, simply because they will always be notified about scholarships from local businesses, local civic organizations, local religious groups. And those are great because you're often a bigger fish in a smaller pond. The second place to look is the internet, and there are a couple of scholarship search engines that are very reputable and that do really good work. The one that I often turn to is called fastweb.com.
Okay.
There are a couple others that are, I think very similar to that. And you can key in some information about yourself, and then it will come back with a repository of scholarships that it thinks might be appropriate for you And for you to look through. One of the organizations that I volunteer for is called Alexander Hamilton Friends Association, and it is for low-income but very, very high-achieving, incredibly civically minded kids. And when we always ask the kids, how did you find out about this award? And they will all say the internet. I think there's like one that'll say from my guidance counselor, but most of them are from the internet.
Valerie, is there a specific one you're looking for? Are you from Finland, for instance?
No. I was just citing that. I knew that there were very odd scholarships that have nothing to do with anything except that you have to fit the bill.
Well, that's a great call. Valerie, thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest. Hope in Great Barrington. Hope, you're on.
Hi. I have a son who took a couple of years of community college and then decided to take a year or two off. And now he's 21 and he's thinking of applying for, I guess, as a transfer student to a four-year college, which he would probably come in as a sophomore. And what I'm wondering is, should he apply as an adult, not entangled with us financially? Is that a possibility, or will he still be under the aegis of our financials?
It used to be a much more complicated question than it is now, because there used to be a loophole that if you were, you know, kind of savvy, you would know about and could kind of exploit so that he could be independent. The federal government closed that loophole, and essentially now, if he is under the age of 24, if he is not a veteran of the U.S. Armed Forces, he's obviously not a orphan or ward of the court, or was before he turned 18, if he does not have children of his own, that he is supporting, then generally speaking, he will be a dependent student, and it's pretty much that cut and dry.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry
to
hear that.
Okay. I am too.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Hope,
yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye. Let's take a break here, Mr. Zach. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Linnell Engelmeyer, we hit the home stretch coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. Smith College Museum of Art, presenting River of Gold, Pre-Columbian Treasures from Sitio Conti, Goldwork from an Ancient American Society in Central Panama, smith.edu/artmuseum for info. And the Garrison in the Hudson Highlands, a country inn, and the Valley Restaurant now open all year with Hudson River views. Private event spaces, winter getaway packages, and holiday gift certificates available, thegarrison.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Linnell Engelmeyer is here. And you said there was a website that'll clear up many questions about financial aid.
Yeah, it is pretty much, without a question of a doubt, the best repository of financial aid information. And that website is www.finaid.org.
FinAid.
Yes, and it is often my go-to source when I have a piece of minutia that I need to look up, and I pretty much have always been able to find everything I'm looking for. So, for example, your last caller wanted to know what it took to be an independent student. You could look it up on there. The other reason that I direct families there very frequently is because there's an expected family contribution calculator on there. So, Ray, if you said, gee, I wonder if my kid were going to college today, I wonder roughly how much I would be expected to contribute. There's a calculator on there that is a pretty exact mirror of the federal financial aid formula. You can take your last completed tax return, sit down in front of that, and it would say to you, you know, if your kid were college bound today, here's how much you would be expected to pay. And it gives families, I think, a very good idea of where they stand.
All right. Let's go to Anthony in Pittsfield. Anthony, you're on.
Hello. I was just to add a kind of a question for you. I just graduated college, and I applied for graduate school, and I actually work in the local school district. And, you know, one thing I have a question for you is do the school districts and college admission offices talk? Because my reason for asking this is because, you know, in regards to your previous guest, Mary, in her venting of athletes being put into colleges and all that, you know, they don't, I find that the guidance counselors and just generically speaking, the guidance counselors, they don't talk, they only talk with the students, and I don't see them talk with parents. Like, when I went to college, they were saying, well, you could go to Williams College, you could go to UMass, you could go to all these major universities, and the reality was that I couldn't afford those schools, so I took the most financially smart way out by going to Berkshire Community College and then MCLA.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, do the schools talk with each other to the parents? I mean,
Do the schools talk with each other or the parents? I can speak for my high school, which is that the parents come in and meet with the guidance counselor. At some point, I will go in with my daughter and meet with her guidance counselor about her college selection. You know, so I think certainly there are a great number of high schools that do that. I will say that I think that high school guidance counseling is an awfully tough job, simply because the demands on them bureaucratically, the demands on them in terms of bigger fires to put out when somebody's being abused at home or abusing something or someone, you know, they really are putting out a lot of fires. And so, you know, I think, and that was really another reason behind the creation of College App Wizard, was to help students become more self-reliant and, you know, kind of leave the guidance counselor for the substantive part of it. But certainly, you know, I think your point is a good one. And I would say to everybody who is about to go through this process, be your own advocate. And, you know, if you get back a list that is not realistic for your family, despite having done a financial aid calculator and knowing where you might fall, then certainly go back and say, you know what, there's no financial safety school here for me, and see what else they can dig up.
And now the second question I have, so I just recently applied to a master's program for education, and, you know, I was reading the application that said write a 1,500-word essay about why you want to be in this program. And, you know, I guess what I'm asking is, why don't the universities ask for a sample of one of your previous writings, like the most recent writing you had, instead of submitting some kind of, I hate to say it, but almost hack job, you know?
It's a fine question. And, in fact, some schools do ask for that. Some schools will say, you can submit A or B or C, and sometimes one of those options is a graded paper. So occasionally it is an option. Why more haven't turned to it? You know what? My guess is if you really wanted a way to manipulate that, you could easily still find a way to manipulate that one. So, you know, I think by asking a set of stock questions, at least you get answers on a level playing field.
All right, Anthony, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good afternoon.
I appreciate your call. 800-348-2551. Janice in Boston Spa is on. Hi, Janice.
Hi. I have a kind of an unusual question, perhaps. My sister is in the process of trying to apply to go back to college. She had been in college right out of high school multiple years ago, and she ended up getting pregnant and marrying her boyfriend and leaving college. She has since decided she wants to go back to college. Mm-hmm. She's 35 now.
Mm-hmm.
All of the schools that she wants to apply to currently take the common application,
mm-hmm.
and there seems to be no way to print it out or no alternatives, and so many of the questions on that don't even apply to her. Things that really, you know, they say something about your guidance counselor or the rest of the family, et cetera. She just is unable to answer the questions. And I wanted to know if there was any way to get help with that, or what would be a good advice for a non-traditional student.
Mm-hmm.
Super brilliant woman. She would be a blessing to any college that would take her. But you can't finish the application.
And that's a really good question. And if you, when you're doing the common application, as you mm-hmm. get to the very bitter end of it, mm-hmm. there is a question that says something to the effect of, is there anything else we should know about you? And that would be a good place to say, I can't really answer question number three because it doesn't apply to me as an adult learner. And that is what I would suggest. I think that communication is probably key on that front. And the other thing that I would do is not to be afraid to call the schools in question and to say, here's who I am. This question doesn't seem to apply to me. How would you suggest that I go about that?
Okay. Who would be the best person at the, not a specific person, but the best department to talk to
about
admissions?
Definitely the admissions office. And also, oftentimes, there is a transfer counselor within the admissions office. And that is really where I would start is I would say, do you have an admissions counselor? The other way to often talk to somebody in admissions is to ask for the admissions person that covers your area geographically, because most admissions offices assign their counselors geographically. So you could ask for the person that covers, for example, the Capital District.
Okay.
Janice, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Bye. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Lynell Engelmeyer, collegeappwizard.com is our guest, and Lauren in Dalton, Mass. Lauren, you're on.
Hi. Quick question. So my son is in eighth grade. We're far from college just yet, and I know that athletics and academics are big criteria. What else could he be doing throughout his high school year that's going to kind of set him apart as a student applying for college?
That is a fantastic question, and the colleges, just about all colleges, will tell you that they look for things in a specific order. The first one, even before they ever look at your grades, is the rigor of the high school transcript. So I could have a 4.0 on a 4.0 scale, but have taken sort of the mental equivalent of underwater basket weaving. and, you know, you may have taken all honors courses, an AP course, you know, whatever. And clearly your GPA is going to be viewed much more seriously than mine would be if the rigor of my transcript did not support it.
Okay.
So that's number one. And that means different things for different people. You know, it does not mean, oh, well, I've got to take every AP class my school has to offer. It really is challenging yourself for you as a baseline. And often what schools will tell you is, if you've gotten A pluses in every single course you've taken, and you've taken all Regents exams and never taken so much as one honors class, they're going to look at that and go, geez, you got all A pluses. Why didn't you try to challenge yourself? And so it really is using yourself as a barometer. Challenge yourself a little bit. Beyond the rigor of the transcript and the grades, I think really what you bring to them as a sense of their sense of community is what's important. Most four-year colleges consider themselves communities. And one of the questions they will often ask themselves is, what do you, the applicant, bring to our sense of community? And as the one caller said a little while ago, it might be that you're an athlete, you might be the musician, you might be the person who's really civically involved. But do you bring something to me? You know, I've worked with students who have published research as an undergraduate. You know, all of those things enhance the sense of community. And really, what drives what your son should do is his passion. And I'll throw my own kid under the bus because he's still in school and not listening.
Okay.
And my son loves two things. He loves his sport and he loves his musical instrument. And he right now, and I can't really say what will happen as he goes through high school, but right now he is involved in some music-related activity every day except Monday. And I don't ever ask him to practice. And, you know, he's really driving the bus on that because it is his love. And my hope for him is that he continues to have that love because I think it really shows. Oftentimes I'll work with a student who may not have a great breadth of activities, but has significant depth within one or two activities. And that passion becomes very clear to the school.
Okay.
So would you were talking about the rigor of the transcript. So even if they're not going to be getting A pluses or high averages in those advanced classes, you would still recommend them taking them as opposed to getting an A in a normal class versus taking, you know, an honors class and just getting a B plus?
You know, I think schools, and I don't like the way they answer this question, but if you ask that question of a college admissions officer, they would say, oh, well, we want you to do both. Ha
right.
ha. And you know, what I say for me, some of it depends, again, on where your interests lie. You know, if your son comes to high school and says, gee, I think I want to be an engineer. And really loves it and is taking apart and rebuilding everything in your house, then you know what? Some honors science classes mm-hmm. might be very consistent and might really help him, whereas, you know, maybe honors Spanish or something he doesn't care quite as much about. So I would say see where what he loves and how it fits together with the whole.
All right.
Okay.
Lauren, thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Bye. Marcus in Connecticut. Marcus, you're on. Hello.
First of all, thank you for taking my call. I have a quick question. I was a disabled veteran in Indiana. In Indiana, because I was a disabled vet, would have free tuition for my child to go to school. However, as a pastor, I've since moved to Connecticut. And because I thought I'd be in Indiana, I was not diligent in saving for education. So my question is, what is the best way to fund education without financing education? My daughter's in the 11th grade, I'm sorry. So we have probably a year and a half. And so I'm just really anxious about that. Is the best way to prepare her for college or to pay for it?
So the first thing that I will do is, number one, having Veterans Day been yesterday, thank you for your service. But in addition to that, I mentioned the website FastWeb. And there are some other scholarship search engines. She should definitely go onto FastWeb, and now would be a good time for her to do that because it will then have time for her to kind of look at different scholarships. But there may well be some. One of the questions that ask is your parent a veteran of the U.S. Armed Forces, and what era veteran were you, or what era veteran were you? That is definitely a place she would want to spend some time. The other place that I would suggest that you go is also the website that I mentioned, finaid.org. There's a link on the homepage that says calculators. From there, there's a link that says expected family contribution calculator. Mm-hmm. When you do that, it will give you an idea of what you, the dad, you know, her dad, are expected to spend on her college education. If it comes back and it says, well, we think you can pay $50,000 a year, and mm-hmm. you know darn well that that's not possible, then that will direct you one way. For example, you may rely much heavier on the Connecticut state system, which is a fantastic one. Or if they say, we think you can pay $5,000. Technically speaking, that $5,000 holds true from school to school to school. So whether you go to UConn or Brown, you should theoretically still be spending that same $5,000. Obviously, that gets to the point we talked about at the beginning of the show, which is that you then have to, there's no guarantee that those schools will fully fund that. And that's what you kind of have to hurry up and wait for. But I think that seeing what the expectation is for your spending is probably the best place for you to start, because it will help you come up with an appropriate financial list of schools.
Marcus, thank you very much. I appreciate the call.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. Let's get one more in here. Nan and Rhinebeck, you have about a minute.
Okay. My grandson is in his second year of college, and the first year he applied for a loan and has it, and his parents and he himself are paying a monthly payment on that loan. Is that an okay thing to do?
So there are a couple of different ways one can finance an undergraduate education. The most common way is through something called the Federal Direct Student Loan Program, formerly known as the Stafford Loan. There are two prongs for that loan. If you had no income, if you were, very, very poor, you would get a portion of that loan that is interest-free to you while you're in school. So both principal and interest are completely deferred until you graduate, until after you graduate. If I was Bill Gates's child and clearly am not going to have financial need, I could actually still borrow that same amount of principal, but I would be responsible for interest only during the in-school period. Now, your grandson should actually have the opportunity under the direct student loan program to defer that interest payment, though the interest will accrue. Depending the PLUS loan, which is the parent loan for undergraduate students, there is an interest-only payment while the student is in school. And if it is a private bank loan, of which there are fewer after the credit crunch, then potentially, yes, there could be payments during the in-school period. But if it comes under a federal loan program, they should have the option of deferring the payment during the in-school period.
Nan, thank you very much for the call. And that's where we will have to leave it today. Linnell Engelmeyer, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And the website is College App Wizard. That's APP, College App Wizard, all one word, .com. Thanks to everybody who called in. Sorry if you didn't make it through. Support comes from MKC Kitchen and Bath Center, Troy, serving the Capital Region with a range of cabinetry and countertops, design services at showroom, mkckitchens.com. Capital Cities Imported Cars, Glenmont, New York, offering new and pre-owned BMWs and Volkswagens, serving the WAMC listening area since 1975, capitalcitiesvw.com. And NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy for answering our, no, he was at the controls. Bruce Herbach answered the phones today. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, says here Pets and Vets is back. I'm not sure if that's correct, but we'll find out tomorrow. In the meantime, stay tuned for a news update.